What's up, Tab Potters? We're back. International break coming to an end, which means Family Action is back. Some exciting games, though. International break. It's going to be part of our topics here today. It's going to cover, well, I guess two of our three topics today. Another exciting breaking news debut for Lee Clayton, producer Lee. We've got PM, we've got PJ, now we've got PL.
Yeah, thank you. I'm excited.
It's good to have you.
Thank you very much. I know you like an analogy. So think of me as your Ander Herrera, filling in center back, doing a job that I don't normally do. I just hope not to mess up the offside trap and make a big mess of it for you.
So don't put you at center back.
Yeah.
Don't put you in the back three, and you're going to succeed today.
Yeah.
I love that. Already rising up the ranks, by the way, with just above at least producer Mike. He hasn't thrown out an analogy yet. Good that the Premier League is back. I feel it. It's so funny. When an international break comes, it's good because we get a chance to rest a little bit, watch people go off and play with their national teams, which creates different storylines. You know, Rashford, for instance, it's not really going that great for him currently. He's not starting regularly for Manchester United. Goes off with England with three lines scoring goals.
Yep.
Some Brazilian players too, you know, Willian and others. And, you know, Coutinho back with some of his Liverpool buddies, yeah, playing with Firmino. So
Lukaku as well, doing it for Belgium.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yep. It's always a good refresher, and then everyone kind of comes back amped, rested, and ready to go.
Yep.
It's going to be great, and one of our topics is going to be about a big game coming up. But before we get to the topics, let's talk about reviews. Thanks for the reviews. Maybe you can help us understand. We don't understand why it helps. We just know it does. That's what we say every time. Please review the show. We don't get why it helps. It just does.
It just does. I mean, it's one of those mysteries that I think no one really knows.
Better left unsolved.
Yeah.
So just review the show, and also with your review, add a stadium in the world, a football stadium, a soccer stadium that you have never been to that you'd love to go and watch a game. And this week, the review from JBruns29 said, for my stadium, I want to go to Craven Cottage now that Fulham is back in the Premier League. What an amazing stadium. You've been to Craven Cottage.
Yes, it's a very unique, very
That's
unique
a good
stadium.
One.
Yeah, it is really good.
I mean, antique. Yeah. As antique as I think stadiums can get, where you have like the pole that's blocking your view.
It's a throwback.
The ball can go out of the stadium into the water, which is always fun.
Yeah. I mean, as well, for listeners that haven't seen it yet, there was a promoted show we did recently on and you get to see, you know, a bit more of Craven Cottage there. So if you haven't seen that, check that out on NBCSports.com. That's one to watch.
So good. So good. So, yeah, he'll Jay Bruns, you'll enjoy that. And if you go this weekend, you might run into Clint Dempsey, who is going back.
Legend.
To, he told me he's going back to Craven Cottage to see the ground that he performed so well on. And he's obviously going to be a part of the discussion today. So the three topics we're going to talk, Pochettino versus Klopp, big game coming up as the Premier League gets going again. We're going to talk Clint Dempsey. Deuce. Maybe the GOAT. The debate is out there.
I would say so, but yeah. He's up there.
We'll get into that. So he's done. He's retiring. And we'll discuss his career and also a little tease about something he's up to next. And then U.S. Men's National Team. All right, so international break comes, and we have an opportunity to continue a project and look at this new young batch of players. So two big games. I mean, for young players getting an opportunity to wear the crest and represent the country, it's a huge honor. And I remember my first game at RFK was against El Salvador. So, I mean, for some of these kids to have their first cap be against Brazil, you know, that's incredible.
That's the top, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like when you're a kid. I remember I didn't get a ton of caps and ended up after injuries just fading out of the national team picture. But one of my last big games was against Brazil. And I told this on the pod last week when I talked to Weston McKinney, and I remember it so well. We were in France. It was a Confederations Cup, and I'm coming down the tunnel, and it's, you know, we're going out to warm up before the game, and you know, you hear the click of the cleats, and you could tell someone's kind of coming up on your right, and I take a little glance, and it's Ronaldinho, and I was just like, be cool, man. You know, don't look over at him. Like, don't ask him. And at this point, we didn't have, you know, we weren't doing selfies, so I was just like, yeah, just look straight ahead. Just look straight. But I slowed down so he could pass me, and I could just take in the legend and just be like, this guy, absolutely insane. And Eto was in that. Cameroon was in our group too. It was amazing. So for them to go out there and play against Brazil, they brought a lot of their big guns. Mm-hmm. So you have to manage expectations and understand that if we're talking about the U.S. out of context, right, and we're looking at these two games, the first one against Brazil and the next one last night against Mexico, you'd say disappointing, right? I mean, without all of the, in a vacuum, without all the other context, you say, didn't create a lot in the attacking end, sat back and kind of, in a way, looked like we always look, right? We've done that before, that kind of sit, be defensive, give up possession.
One of the strengths of the U.S. national team is to defend.
Sure, right? Sure. And it's okay to go back to that, right? And it's also okay to show respect for national teams. I mean, you're as good as we think we are. We're going to constantly come up against teams that are better than us, and you have to have a game plan for that. I've got no problem with that, but we need to add the context. So, I think there was only like four players in the rosters between these two games that had over 10 caps. I mean, this is a untested, brand new, very young group.
I looked up and I was expecting to see a few caps for these guys, and seeing it, you had the DeAndre Yedlin with 50 caps plus.
Yeah.
But beyond that, and two or three other guys, they were single figure caps.
Yeah.
Low single figure caps.
And so, going back to my first game, I mean, I think my first few games was like Guatemala and Costa Rica and El Salvador and New Zealand, and South Korea, out of the gate, Brazil, Mexico, you have to take a step back and say, okay, do we want to be a more aggressive, attacking-minded team? Do we want to have a better sense of how we get at powers? And Mexico is a local power and Brazil is a global power. Do we have a way to hurt these teams and be more consistent in how proactive we are and the style more attractive and all that? Yeah, of course. But where are the positives? Because this still is a very, very young group. And, I'd say if you're looking ahead to next World Cup, the great part about the failure we just went through is we don't need to win now. We don't have a real competitive game for almost, 6 months to a year, right? So this is about, of course, a World Cup cycle, because we need to start thinking about qualifying and you need to look at who's going to be there next time. And that's where you start to have to look at ages, right? So, guys like Michael Bradley, as good as he is, and he's still a fantastic player, I mean, how old is he going to be in the next World Cup?
So Bradley, we said, I think he's 30, going to be, he's 31 now.
Five? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pushing past it. Right. I mean, you want to say that Michael Bradley isn't in the next World Cup, because it means one of these young guys is stepping into that role and is really coming in to their own. And, I guess Will Trapp would be the kind of like for like, although he's played a very deep role in the midfield. And it's something that was always debated about Michael Bradley. Sure. Should he be a more advanced player? Where should he be used? But the good part is Will Trapp is growing into that role. And I think Greg Berhalter did a great job in trying to turn him into a deep playmaking player who's very quick on the ball, understands spatial situations, joins the back three from time to time to help build out of the back. He's wearing the armband, so he's getting a bit of, the leadership experience. And I think he was a positive. I think he still needs to grow, and there's still a process here to see if he's good enough for that next level or the next World Cup. But I like him. There are a few things that I'm excited about. So I'm really excited about Weston McKennie.
Yeah.
I wouldn't agreed. Tell you, and he got hurt in the game against Mexico, so we didn't get to see a lot of him. The game against Brazil, we didn't see a lot of the ball, so we didn't see a lot of many of the U.S. players. But I just think he has so many of the qualities and is being tested day in and day out, Schalke, and he's in good competition. He's got a great mindset, and we heard that last week. If you haven't listened to it, go listen to last week's pod. He's just a confident player that plays with an air of someone with more experience than he has.
Yep.
And I think we've been using him a bit more advanced, and eventually that's Christian Pulisic or someone that is taking on the creative attacking responsibility that he's been pushed into recently. And he's kind of a deeper, if we're playing, if we're playing 4-2-3-1, he's one of the holders that gets forward. Or if you're playing a midfield three, he's one of the guys ahead of the holder.
Yep.
He's someone that can join late, that can build things, that can be creative. And I just, I still thought, even though it was underwhelming, I see every time he plays, there's something special here, and I'm excited about him.
I mean, you mentioned it, kind of talking about the guys getting experience, and that's one of the silver linings here. And so the likes of him, of Weston McKennie, who is getting good experience playing for his club team, you know, that's where I see the positive side and the future that's going to come from this young team. To get this experience now is great. Where I'm wondering is something which is a big debate: who is the person that should be leading these people in that direction? You know,
you mean coach wise,
yes,
or
yes.
Yeah? So yeah, I mean that's the other problem is, you know, we have Ernie Stewart in as the GM now. There's a lot to discuss about that. Whether the role is defined the right way, is he going to be the right guy? I think for the moment, the look at it as a positive. Finally, there's a guy with experience, with technical nous, making decisions on who's the coach, how do we play, you know, what's the vision. So that's good. That's a positive. Long term, we'll see if it's the right thing. But for right now, let's just skip past and say, okay, that's a good thing. Who the coach is going to be is a big debate. And Taylor Twellman before the game was having a really interesting discussion on, you know, what's taking so long. If what's taking so long is you're really trying to shop for a big market manager, right? You're waiting for, and I think he said Pep Guardiola or something, you know, if you're waiting for one of these big figures or you're thinking you have a chance at getting them, is it worth waiting? And for me, yeah, it is. Because, you know, we should benefit from the tragedy, right? We should benefit from the fact that we just had this huge disappointment. And because of it, we can be more strategic in the short term about developing players as opposed to short-term success, right? It was easier to kind of clean house because if it was the same manager that just performed well in the World Cup, we'd have a lot of these guys still in the group.
Yep.
And we'd be dealing with veterans that are kind of getting to that expiration date. So right now, I'm okay taking some time to make sure this is the right coach. And I guess you use the polar discussion of, is it big European, you know, global manager, or is it local, domestic, kind of progressive, younger coach? And so, you know, let's use polar opposites of like a Greg Berhalter versus a Pep Guardiola, which obviously is a bit of a fantasy. I just think right now, I'm okay with, and I think it makes sense to proactively go with a guy like Greg Berhalter and say, listen, he's played for the national team, which there is value in that. He understands this landscape. He's coached professionally here. He's played internationally. He understands how European players think, or ones that are either dual citizens or have been growing there and learning there. He gets, and also has a relationship with Ernie Stewart, and that they were teammates. And Ernie made it clear, not friends. You know, some people make that assumption because you play with people, you're friends. So there's a working relationship already that they can tap into, and a mutual respect. I just think something like that makes sense right now, coming out of instability and also going with a coach that already proved he can mold young players, and he's done it at Columbus. And he's got a great style of play. Mm-hmm. He's got an ambitious style of play. And I just think, go with that right now. So that part of the argument I get. Go right now with that, because you stabilize things, you go with a good young manager. And I don't care. It doesn't have to be an American. It doesn't have to be anyone. It just has to be a certain category that can be checked by someone that was born here or played here or played for the U.S. or not. And I just think Greg Berhalter, take away he's American, take away he played for the U.S., checks a ton of boxes. So I'm okay with going in that direction. And then some of the pieces he has also, you know, the other thing I was excited about is...
There we go.
All right, I'll finish it right here. The other thing I was excited about is, you know, attacking-wise, we have a debate, and we'll have that debate another day. You know, Jozy Altidore's getting up there, and some people think we should move on from him. I mean, people forget he's only 28 still.
Yeah.
You know, that's another debate, and that will take 10 more minutes. But the defensive issues we've had, there's a good young goalkeeper. I like Stefan. I think he's good. I think he's strong. Center backs. I mean, Greg Berhalter, that was the last time we trusted center back pairs. I mean, it was kind of like Agus and Eddie Pope and Berhalter and Bocanegra. There were established center back partnerships for a while. And then all of a sudden, these last couple cycles, no one really got reps together. It was just churning people in and out. And I just think start now, because, you know, Tim Ream, who's not an established center back, who I think is a terrific center back, is what? 30? I mean,
he's 30.
And then Beasler's got to be in his like early 30s.
31, I believe.
Yeah. So you're in the next generation already. So just trust Miazga, trust some of these guys, yeah, and Brooks, and just give them a ton of reps together. Don't put someone in and they have a bad game, like we saw with Jeff Cameron sometimes. Then all of a sudden he's out of the lineup. Try to find stability and continuity in the heart of the defense. And Greg Berhalter, having been a center back, of course he'll start there, right? I mean, he'll understand that. He'll feel comfortable with that. And he knows what a center back pairing needs to feel and needs to see and how they need to be coached. Build everything off of that, because it's going to take a while to become the attacking-minded team we want to be.
Yeah.
So we can't lose defensive stability while we're chasing this dream of young players and young, you know, Tim Way and all these young, exciting players tearing, you know, big world powers apart.
I mean, these young guys are a very good age for the next World Cup.
Yeah.
You know, they will be starting to hit their peak before that World Cup comes along. So, you know, if they do build these partnerships, surely that's
a
really positive.
And ride the growing pains.
Yeah.
You know, I remember Portugal did this and Belgium did it. Like, take a golden generation, and, like, you wouldn't call this a golden generation, but we're kind of forced into this youth project. Just ride the growing pains. You know what I mean? Like, let them have some bad games, call them back in. You know, as long as they're performing well with their club teams, stick with these guys. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion. So talking about aging U.S. players in the next generation, Clint Dempsey has announced he is retiring from the game. And I'll tell you, I spoke to him before his announcement came out. And when he told me, I was emotional. Like,
yeah.
I was surprised that I was so upset. And I said it to him. I go, man, I have to say, like, I'm really sad to hear that. And he said, I'm not. You know, because you forget, like, the mileage on this guy's mm-hmm. legs. I mean, how many games he's played, and also the type of game he plays. Like,
yes,
I just, one of the things I loved about him the most is he was just a street player. You know what I mean? Like, he just fought for absolutely mm-hmm. everything, and he just had that, like, irreverence and that courage and that just the dedication to perform and be tough to play against, regardless of how he was playing that day. And so that adds up, man. I mean, like, you know, I'm sure I had to retire at 28 because of injury. I mean, this guy was a few years behind me, and he's still going strong. So, like, I can't imagine what his body must feel like the way he plays.
I don't recall many huge, like, injuries for him as well, where he'd been out for long periods of time.
No, he played a ton of games.
So he's racked up the games for sure.
Yeah, always called in for the U.S. team, right? I mean, always, you know, if not off the bench early, like an important part of his club teams. And I think the debate on greatest ever, he's in there. Like, you have a strong debate mm-hmm. to say Clint Dempsey's the greatest ever player we've produced.
I mean, his numbers back up that as well. You know, I can go back to growing up watching the Premier League and watching him, you know, really be a star player in the Premier League. And so,
how is he received over there? Because it seems like, you know, especially at Fulham, where Americans have been received really well, he was loved.
It's one of those things where it's one of those preconceptions that people have about American players in the UK, where, you know, they might be good, but are they good enough to cut it in Europe or whatever in the Premier League? And he that was never in doubt with him. He was there and just dominated games, you know, and Fulham loved him. Like, the Fulham fans adore him, and quite rightly so. I mean, he's their top goal scorer, leading top goal scorer, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, if he stayed, you know, he could be just a legend. I mean, listen, he's always going to be remembered, just like McBride mm-hmm. at Fulham, but, like, yeah, he could have been a legend there, because you could argue maybe they don't drop down if they had a Clint Dempsey, especially at that point in his career with how regular he was scoring. And Spurs go for him, and then his career kind of takes a different path, and he did what every player at his level is going to do, try to get into the bigger, more challenging situation. But, like, I remember coming on the scene, and it's funny, the first time I met Clint Dempsey, I was playing in Columbus. He was a rookie for the New England Revolution, and I would always have a house party afterwards. It was funny, like, my house in downtown Columbus was just kind of known, like, in the league, that you just showed up on Kyle's back porch, and I'd get back from training or from the game, and a lot of times I'd have to stay late because my body was falling apart. I get there and my porch was already full, you know, and it was always the away team too would always come. And funny enough, Fulham, when they played in the All-Star game, came to my house afterwards, and Dempsey was there that night. And I remember him from the game and thinking, like, man, this kid's got some. He had his long hair at that point, and I was like, there's something about this kid. Just the style he had and the flair that he brought to his game. And I went up to him and tried, you know, did kind of like a tough guy, like, hey, rookie, you know, like, you got to help us like clean up the bottles or something. And then what I loved about Clint right away was he was like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like that, like Clint was never a rookie. Like, you know what I mean? He was a guy that knew where he was supposed to go and what he was going to achieve. And like at that point I was the established guy at that point. I mean, I'd already played for the U.S. You know, I was rookie of the year in the MLS and was on a trajectory. I was on the cover of Soccer America as like the next era. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, don't get anywhere near any of that for myriad reasons. So like I was kind of the guy that you know, Clint would look up to and all that stuff. But like right from the beginning, you could see in his face, like, no. Like everyone's going to know who I am here soon. And it was the right level of cockiness.
But that's the way he played as well.
Totally.
You know, he would have the arrogance and would back it up with performances, goals, you know, the numbers proved it. And so for him to be like that on and off the field,
it makes sense. Yeah, you need to. In such a difficult, cutthroat, high-demand world, you have to have that self-confidence, right? Weston McKennie has that. Yeah. And that came across in the interview I did with him last week. And it didn't take very long before we were going into U.S. camps, and it was reversed. Mm. And I was thinking, man, this guy Clint Dempsey can friggin' play. And like, yeah, we would go at it in training because we were the two skillful guys where he was more of like a goal scorer, like kind of false nine, and I was more of a playmaking number 10. But we would like get into tackles with each other and stuff, which like for me is a laugh because I couldn't tackle like a wet, you know, bag, right? So like I remember getting in these battles and it was clear, like I was insecure. I was thinking like this guy's going to be better than me and this guy already is like achieving more at the U.S. than I have. And, you know, it took a little while to like let a lot of that go and celebrate like how awesome is it that we got a guy like this and maybe keeping me out of the team or you know, maybe now it just shows me that I'm not going to be able to get where I wanted to go. And, you know, injuries start piling up and I start heading in the opposite direction. But, like, very quickly, I just was like, I want to celebrate a player like this, man. Because this guy, his backstory is absolutely incredible and tragic where he comes from Nacogdoches, Texas, you know, finds the game, falls in love with it, plays. And we had similar experiences but totally different upbringing. So I grew up in an affluent community where, you know, my parents could afford me to put me in all sorts of soccer, but I chose to go play indoor with the Hispanics and Latinos and, you know, play indoor with the Caribbeans and Edson Buttle and his dad. And Clint, just by the community he was in and the groups he was around and also their inability to pay for either traveling to, you know, go play for big clubs or the cost to pay for big clubs, he played in a lot of that recreational pickup community. You can see it in his game, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so at one point, he had a very successful athlete sister who was a tennis player, and his parents had to make the worst choice a parent has to make and decide, as Clint's career in the youth level, like he was getting identified and he could go play for a club team in Dallas, and like he was good enough to start moving up. But his parents had to just make a choice because his sister was a great tennis player too. So they decided to invest in her career, and tragically, she passed away a few years after they made that decision. And it's like, wow, it's just such an awful and in so many ways a story that would just cripple any family. I mean, to lose a child, and also at that situation, Clint, knowing full well like what his parents are having to deal with, and losing your sister. I mean, the fact that he and his family rose from that to the amazing person he became, and I'm sure, I don't want to speak for him, but I'm sure every time he plays, he's playing for his sister, and the level he reached, and the story, and the ability to take such a difficult situation, and almost Phoenix from the Flames become this inspiring icon to so many. It's just, that's part of the thing I'm mourning is I'm going to miss just watching him on a field because I just love seeing him try to entertain and win at the same time and understanding the balance between the two of those. But also, like, he's the type of kid that, or well, now old guy that kids should look up to, you know? I mean, that story, his family and the way he plays and where he's come from and how what a great family person he is. It's just like, it's a shame that, and I know he'll stay in the picture somehow, but it's just a shame that he won't be on that field anymore for kids to aspire to be, because, man, you have 11 Clint Dempseys on the field. If we had 11 Clint Dempseys on the field down in Trinidad and Tobago, we'd be in a World Cup. For sure,
yeah.
100%. Playing, by the way, every position. So I'm going to miss him. I'm going to miss him, Clint Dempsey, the player, but I'm not going to break it, but there's a cool thing that he's going to be up to now. I'm sure he's going to enjoy checking out in retirement, and he loves to fish. He loves to hunt. He loves his family. I'm sure he's going to love being out of the public eye a little bit. But an announcement coming here soon, just a cool thing that he's going to lend some of his time to, which makes so much sense when you think of the player he is. So look for that soon. Clint Dempsey, I'll just tell you, even though I was older than you, I looked up to you, man. What a career you had. What a player you are. Because I'm going to get you out and pick up games. I mean, you're going to keep playing. We can't let you hang those boots up with what it looks like when you play the game. But just thank you, Deuce. It was pretty amazing. On to Premier League. So Fulham, Clint Dempsey will be at the Fulham game. He's going to Craven Cottage. I'm sure he's going to get an incredible amount of love there. He got a tremendous amount of love on Twitter, and you know, Kobe Bryant and others were thanking him for his career. So I wonder what he's going to think of his Fulham. They've had a tough start to their campaign, but they're moving in the right direction, and I think getting some important players back from injury, and you know, they've got a fight to stay up in the league. The fight at the top of the table, which is fascinating, and I think early on this is one of the more intriguing matchups.
It's a huge game.
Pochettino versus Klopp. Spurs welcome Liverpool, and This has big implications on many different levels.
Yeah.
So we could take this any direction. Let's take it kind of the top four, you know, just battle and points, and let's keep it kind of high level of what does this mean for their campaign. It's obviously early on. Let's not get too dramatic and hyperbolic, but you know, both of these teams are battling for top four. I mean, ultimately, I think that's the goal everyone will agree on. A lot of people don't have either of these teams in their top four. I happen to have both of them, which is pretty rare.
Yeah, I mean, competition for top four is massive. Tough as it's been, really.
Yeah.
I mean, this season.
I mean, to think Watford's unbeaten already. So, I mean, yeah. Top four might be an eight club battle. Yeah. So, a loss at this point. You know, who does that harm in that goal early on here? And you'd have to say Spurs. So I think Liverpool are out of the gate super fast. They look like they've hit the ground running. It's a project also that not only has trended in the right direction, as Spurs have with Pochettino. Some people might say maybe it's been stagnant, but man, I mean, stagnation when you're in the top three is a pretty good thing.
That's consistent.
On their budget.
That's consistent stagnation.
Yeah,
right there.
You'll take that.
Yeah.
But it's moving in the right direction. One of the things missing from both clubs is trophies, but one of the things missing from Spurs that Liverpool had is the injection of capital, of players that have absolutely changed them. So Van Dijk has absolutely changed Liverpool.
Yeah. He's been the player they've been dying for, and he has transformed their defense.
Yeah, and Alisson has transformed it in a bad way with some of his tricks, but I'm sure he's learned that lesson, and we'll see if he's learned that lesson. But a fantastic goalkeeper, hasn't been tested as much. Kind of, you know, going back to your point, he's not facing as many shots or as many expected goal opportunities as the goalkeepers before him, Karius and Mignolet. So they're better. They're starting really well. I mean, title race conversation is really becoming the relevant one for them. So a loss at this point hurts Spurs. I mean, it hurts Spurs because it'd be you know, two losses in a row. You know, the international break will hopefully make people forget the Watford performance.
Sure.
Wasn't a good one. Wasn't a good one. And Pochettino's shifting the team around a lot. He's gone from the back four to the back three. You know, Sanchez has been out of the back line, back in the back line. I think we're seeing with Dembele that I love him, man. I think the guy's a Rolls Royce. He's one of the best players and has been one of the best players in his position for the last three or four seasons, but he's getting past it.
Yeah.
I think the Watford game where he was asked to hold alone was demonstrative of the fact that he's hitting an expiration point and can't bring consistently what he brought before.
I combine his injury history, losing legs, it's not a good combination for a player like that. Mm-hmm. He has a lot of work to do in that midfield.
Yeah, yeah. So, listen, Wanyama, I mean, you know, at some point he comes back. You know, I think Dyer is good in that role for sure. It's just, I think Pochettino has shifted things more than he regularly does. Sometimes a 4-4-2 diamond. You know, the one area of things tactically that he's done recently, and it's a signing but not a new signing that has helped tremendously, is Lucas Moura playing mostly as a strike partner for Harry Kane has changed them, has made them a more dynamic, more dangerous side. You know, he could be the impetus for the competition that you need to not get complacent, because they, you know, didn't sign a field player in the summer. But also take the load off of Harry Kane a bit. You know, you can't really expect Harry Kane to keep operating at the level he's been operating in terms of production in the Premier League. So, you know, that partnership so far looks really good, but it just created a bit of a decision to be made behind them. And it seems that Pochettino is kind of tweaking stuff. So at this point, another loss, now all of a sudden they're butting up against a bit of pressure.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the voices of, man, we're moving in this new stadium, which by the way is getting delayed. It just allows negative things to kind of grow and permeate when a good win against Liverpool shuts all that stuff down.
I feel like with Spurs, they start either slowly or have a bit of a stutter at the beginning of pretty much every season, and then pick up momentum as it goes. I mean, last season you had the whole Wembley hoodoo,
yeah,
and now this season it's the, you know,
the transition hoodoo and not buying players. Yeah,
yeah. So they need to nip it in the bud.
Yeah, and the big question is tactically, what does Pochettino do? Because there's, I think I've thought about this, and you know, there's a debate, but there's no more irresistible attacking three. I mean, you could put Manchester City, even though they're not a traditional top three. You know, sometimes he plays them as a three, where, you know, either Sané, who's not getting a lot of burn right now, or Sterling get really high and play with either Gabriel Jesus or Aguero. But I think this is the most difficult top three to defend in the global game right now. I mean, that's going to include, you know, PSG and Barcelona and some of these sides. So how does he handle that? Does he go with the back three of Alderweireld, Davinson Sanchez, and Vertonghen? I think he does. You know, I think he's going to match them and add wingbacks that can come and join and help a little bit. Whether he goes with Henderson or Wijnaldum will be interesting. Wijnaldum a bit more dynamic and cover a bit more ground. Henderson a bit more disciplined. So that's going to be a big decision tactically on, you know, how does Liverpool play with their deep guys, right? And who plays in that game? Because if it's Wijnaldum, he comes and joins, and with he and Naby Keita, I mean, now you have even more of a headache.
Yeah.
So you need not only a back three, but Dyer's going to need more support than playing a diamond with Dele Alli and Eriksen, right? You might have to add another defensive influence in there. Mm-hmm. So it's just really interesting to see tactically how this matches up. And then I think what gets created off of this game is the kind of Pochettino-Klopp comparison, right? So, like, where are we with these guys where neither have achieve what they want to achieve in the Premier League? Both of them projects that are moving in the right direction, both of them getting a lot of accolades. I mean, mm-hmm. being lionized, and I think rightfully so, but no silverware yet. So, you know, where are we, Klopp versus Pochettino?
If you spoke to either a Liverpool fan or a Tottenham fan, and you said, before these managers came in, this is what you'll be getting over the next few seasons, a lot of the fans would say, yeah, great. But now they've kind of become used to that. They want that next level.
Yeah.
So it's going to be very interesting to see which manager can break through that ceiling first and get some silverware.
And I just wonder with, like, if Pochettino's not going to be backed because of the stadium, right? If Daniel Levy, and listen, we saw it with Arsenal moving from Highbury to the Emirates, different time, different situation, but, you know, a $1 billion project does handicap you a bit in terms of what you can do with your wage bill or your transfer fees. But if I'm Pochettino, you know, at some point I think I've gotten you guys as close as I can. If you're not going to back me with, you know, what Liverpool are spending, what Manchester United are spending, and what Chelsea are spending, although Chelsea have stopped spending a ton, but still, you know, historically what Manchester City's, if you're not going to back me like those clubs, then you can't expect me to go and win the Premier League, and it's unrealistic to expect me to continue to, you know, get every last bit of success out of a group that at some point also is going to say, hey, I could be making almost double my wages if I go to another club. So it's a bit of a combustible situation where the new stadium is going to create a situation of, okay, well, we've done that. Like now, okay, yeah, new stadium's great. That was fun. We got to open it. And now what? And the what is transfer fees and taking wages up. And we just don't know if Daniel Levy is going to, you know, is going to do that. It's just, that's the big thing, right? And Klopp has been supported by the Fenway Sports Group. And he's
yes,
finally asked for the money, because initially he wasn't really demanding things because this is how he operates. Mm-hmm. It's how he operated at Borussia Dortmund. Slow progress, work with the players you have, develop some young players out of the academy. Okay, I know what I have now and I know where we're short. This is what I want to buy, and go identify it and buy it. So that model is now working at Liverpool. But for both of these managers, you know, there are clubs that have spent far less than Spurs have and have won FA Cups and have won League Cups and have won Europa Leagues and have won, you know, have gone on to do things. So the fact they keep tripping up and coming up short will eventually be a negative that tarnishes the project of Pochettino in the early career. But what he's going to do is, you know, Manchester United, some of these other jobs are going to come up soon. He'll just take the credit he has and parlay it into something that is closer to a finished project or has the spending power to get him there. With Klopp, I think he wins something here soon. I mean, I think they can win the Premier League this year. I absolutely do. I said it before the season. People thought I was crazy. I think they can win the Premier League this year. I thought Manchester City was going to slip up a bit. Now, this is super early days, mm-hmm. but I think he's going to win the Premier League this year. And I think he's going to become, with Pep Guardiola, the most coveted and wanted manager in the world, and he's going to write his own ticket. But essentially, he's got what he needs. I think he stays at Liverpool, turns them back into, you know, I mean, never what they were before, because that, I don't think that's ever going to happen again in the modern game, right? I mean, they're not going to dominate like they did in the 80s, but, like, just bring them back with that stadium, with the support they have there, with the, I mean, the youth in this squad, the way they play. I mean, he could stay there for 4 or 5 more years and create a legacy. I mean, well, create something that can be replicated.
You said it. He's got the charisma. He's got the style of football. Put a title in his hands. That's
the only thing missing. Yeah. It happens to be a really big thing. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I think this is the first pod I haven't said the name Jose Mourinho. Although, that's it. I just said it, but it's amazing that, like, they ended the international break, right, with a win that, yeah. Whew, I mean, there was a lot in that still needed to be debated. There's still a lot under the surface, but like I said in that show, it was all going to go away over the international break. And other than Jose Mourinho tripping over that velvet rope, which went viral, you know, it was real quiet. Yeah. You know, a couple of Pogba comments that everyone, you know, in the international break, there's always an interview that sparks. But things were really quiet with Jose, with Manchester United. So all of a sudden, like, this game's going to happen. And this, I mean, Watford away, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a way to come back into league, but a perfect opportunity and it's not going to be easy. We just saw that with Spurs. If they start the international break with a win against Watford, it goes a long way into quieting down all of the rumors of moves and discontent and the combustible situation underneath Jose Mourinho right now.
Yeah, that Burnley win may have just been a band-aid on the situation.
Sure. We'll see.
We'll see.
Well, time will tell. But we're back. It's good to have you on here, man.
Yeah,
let's just,
really,
I mean, I wonder who's going to lose playing time now, because
I mean,
you obviously prove you're ready for this level.
Competition for places.
That's right. That's right. All right, Tapar, it's good to be back. Keep those reviews coming. Keep subscribing, keep listening, and also stay on your feet.